This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
Hey, VREP community, it's Adam Scalina, and today I'm introducing the show myself. Matt is not here. He can't be here with us today, but we wish him well wherever he is. No idea. So this is a great conversation. I'm super excited. This is a conversation that Matt and I had earlier this month. It's a version of the chat that we gave at the Vancouver Real Estate Investment Summit, but it's a lot longer. We talked at the summit for 15 minutes. This is about 45 minutes talking about the market and talking mostly about what you're going to be hearing in the market, what we know to be true on the ground. And then, of course, we're going to wrap up with what we like, some of the opportunities in the city of Vancouver upcoming. So this is a very exciting chat. But before we get to that, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Oakland Realty. Love this place. It's the best brokerage in the business. If you are an agent, a seasoned agent or a new agent, and you're looking for a change, why don't you reach out to Oakland Realty? The best way to do that is to head over to oakland.com/join, put in the code VRP2020, and there is a huge incentive for you as a listener to this podcast. So definitely check that out. Again, it's VRP2020 at oakland.com/join. And finally, I just want to mention our Sellers Club. We've had so many people sign up. If you want to be a member of the most exclusive club in Vancouver real estate, the Sellers Club, where you get the best resources, action plans, checklists for marketing your home in the greater Vancouver area, just send us an email to info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com and put Sellers Club in the subject line. We will be sure to send you out some of our action plans, how to get your home ready for market in Vancouver, and there are new resources coming all the time. So get on that list. And without further ado, my chat with the milk carton kid himself, Matt Scalina. Okay, guys, so this is a take on a talk we actually gave at the Vancouver Real Estate Summit a few weeks back.
That's right.
And so what we're talking about today is what's really happening in the Vancouver real estate market. And just as a quick overview before we get to it, we're going to talk about what you're hearing. So what you're actually hearing out there about the market and about the potential directions the market could go. Then we're going to talk about what we know, what we're seeing on the ground, what's actually happening. And then we'll follow up with what we like, so some opportunities in the market.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting moment, of course, Adam. We are
in a summer that is much busier than most people thought.
Right.
I mean, we'll get into the June numbers, but July has been busy. There's no doubt about it. And yet, you know, we had Eric Bond on from the CMHC a couple weeks back, who's predicting a slowdown in the fall and a real slowdown in 2021. We're seeing cases here kind of stagnant, but other places in the country and the U.S. Growing. So really uncertain times. And I think this is a useful way to kind of think about the real estate market right now.
Yeah. So, Matt, why don't we start with what you are hearing about the market conditions?
So one thing you are hearing right now is the market set to collapse. I feel like depending on what channels you're looking at, you're maybe hearing this all the time. This is right. The one.
There's certain channels you've been hearing this for years.
The one consistent thing that's said about Vancouver real estate is it's always set to collapse. So in this case, of course, we're directly referencing Eric Bond's talk on this show from CMHC, and also Evan Siddall, CMHC's CEO, went in front of Parliament and gave a pretty dire warning a couple months back as well. Of course, Evan Siddall was saying across the country we're going to see 9 to 18% declines. Eric Bond came on and basically said the same thing about Vancouver. So we're hearing there's big declines coming. 2020 is actually not so much. 2021 is more significant with a rebound in 2022. And you're also hearing, and this was also from this podcast, that Vancouver is the most indebted city in the country, which right. leaves us in a position that some would say is vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. When Kennedy Stewart is coming out and saying that the city is broke.
And Eric Bond's coming out and saying everybody who lives in the city is broke.
Yeah. It reminds me of the first 10 years of my adulthood.
15 for me. So that's what you're hearing, right? We're in a position where we're going to see fairly significant market declines. But what do we know?
Yeah.
Okay. Because like we talked about before, you know, predictions of huge market declines have largely fallen flat
sure.
in the past. So I think it's useful to kind of take a step back here. Let's move to what we know. Okay.
Right.
On the ground conditions, July 2020. And it's useful, Adam, I think, to take a step back and to think about where we were pre-COVID. So we've talked a lot on this show about the last kind of slowdown that we saw mid-2018 through mid-2019, which I would argue, and I think most people would now, A, was not nearly as bad as most people thought, and B, was policy-induced, right?
Yeah.
This was related to a bunch of provincial legislation. It was related to the national stress test. We saw significant declines in certain submarkets, right? Especially at the higher end, and not so much at the entry level. But we were really coming out of that, and I feel like the last time we did opportunities in 2020, we were in a very different moment pre-COVID. Since about August 2019, the market was ramping up. It was getting busier and busier. In January and February, we were basically running off our feet, right?
Yeah.
2020 was set to be a banner year for sure. It's worth noting, back in February 2020, inventory was down over 20% less than February 2019. So what we were seeing was a lot of multiple offers, a lot of people that were struggling to find a property that would work, a lot of urgency in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that summarizes it.
And then, of course, the second week of March hit.
Yeah.
Now, what do you remember about that week?
I remember thinking this is a big issue in Asian countries. I remember thinking this is a big issue in Italy. And I was like, well, nothing is impacting Vancouver. And then instantly it seemed to start to change, right?
Well, I'm one of these guys who's revising my memory. And I was thinking late 2019 that this was going to be an issue. I've talked to like 10 people now that are remembering themselves as the guys who were sounding the alarm. I don't know if you're talking to those guys.
You know what though? I feel like even in the market, like I remember the third week of March, there was multiples on everything, busy open houses. And I was already at that point.
You were panicking.
Yeah, I was hiding under my bed and with sanitizer. And I actually remember going like, is this not nuts? Like, is this crazy? I was reading all the reports from like doctors in Italy and people that were
shredded lungs and things
Yeah, exactly. And it was just like, what's going on here?
Right. Yeah. So I think you took it very seriously starting in March.
Yeah. Then I forgot it existed in April. No, just kidding. No.
What I remember was we were going to a Canucks Winnipeg Jets game.
Yeah.
That was going to be unreal. My family was going on a vacation without me,
right?
Which was going to be unreal. Like 4 or 5 days. There was like that hockey game when they were gone, and it was basically going to be the week of the year.
No family in a hockey game.
And within like four.
Keep in mind, you had years of family time leading up to that. The best years of your life.
I know. And actually, ever since, we've just grown closer together in small quarters. But I remember it was like they were about to get on the plane on the Friday. And that week was as everything, every day, it was like moving so quickly.
Right.
Where, by the end of the week, no one was going anywhere. The NHL was no longer, nor was the NBA. And
life was over as we knew it.
Life was over as we knew it, right? So what happened at the market? You're right.
I actually forget about – just a side note. It's like sports don't exist anymore, eh? It's crazy.
And you know what's actually the crazy part is I felt like I was following along very closely. And,
with hockey, yeah.
I don't watch
a lot of sports.
But I don't really miss it, to be honest.
Well, no, but it's weird.
That's the scary part for them, I think.
Well, yeah, but I think that's the thing is without hearing about it on like the news or without hearing about it on like, you know, on TV or like an update, I just feel like sports are just – they just don't exist.
Yeah.
It's
gone. Yeah. You know what? I wonder what TSN's even playing. I think it's 30 for 30 documentaries just on repeat.
Just that Jordan documentary on repeat.
Yeah, but okay. So enough about sports. Let's get back to the market. So you remember, and I think I remember talking. This was specifically East Van Detached, where it seemed like there was some late open houses. It seemed like there was some late kind of crazy multiples.
Sure.
But basically, the market shut down. Right. So we went into what other past guests have called a medically induced coma.
Sure.
The tap shut off. Right. Yeah. April sales, April 2020 sales were 63% below the 10-year average. Now, to give a sense of how dramatic that is.
Sure.
That's the lowest number of sales since 1982.
The year you graduated.
Yeah, from university? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of incredible, right? That's almost 40 years ago. The one thing to note, and we've talked about on the show, was listings were pulled from the market. Everyone postponed. So listings were down almost equally as low, right? They were down 59.7% in April. So again, medically induced coma, we basically shut down entirely. The big question was – what does this look like when we emerge? And we've emerged, and we've been busier than I gotta say, busier than I was thinking.
I was looking at a chart. I should pull that up and I should put it on the website because I was looking at a chart the other day, and it literally looks like the letter V, like a V-shaped recovery.
Right.
Like it's exactly what a lot of analysts suggested it would be.
Well, at least early on, right? Everyone was saying, is it going to be a V? Is it going to be an L? And then, you know, the most optimistic people were thinking V.
Yeah.
And at least right now in the real estate market, it seems that that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And I can already feel the bears reviewing us.
Yeah, this isn't going to go over this well isn't on YouTube. Go over well.
I know, exactly.
We're talking about what we know, right? Okay, yeah. We've already said what you hear.
I mean, I'd love to see some stats that show something else.
Yeah. So let's talk about spring market being delayed. So May 2020, we saw sales increase. We saw sales increase basically 34% over April 2020. Now, again, April was a lowest number of sales since 1982. So that's no big whoop. But May, we were still definitely scared. You know, that was when I went to Costco and felt very – like I was uncomfortable.
Yeah. With how much bulk chocolate bars you bought. That's what you were mostly uncomfortable about.
Yeah. What is the person checking me out thinking right now?
Exactly. Exactly.
So May, we saw an uptick. June, we saw a dramatic uptick, right? Now, this was when the thawing was happening. 64.5% over May. So May, we saw 34% over April. June, we saw basically 66% over May. Now, here's the interesting thing. June 2020 outperformed June 2019, okay, by 20%, or nearly 20%, I should say. Let's be specific, 17.6% over June 2019. So there's a couple things to note here. Everyone's going to remember June 2019, not a busy month, right? That was when we were pretty slow. So that's not a huge deal. But considering what we came out of, the fact that we're doing 20% in terms of sales volume over the year before, I think that's
staggering.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
staggering.
A pandemic.
We're in a pandemic. Come on. We're in a global pandemic here. That is staggering. So again, there's a few kind of points to note here before we move on to the next. But one, we're still below the 10-year kind of average sales volume, right?
Sure.
This is – so, you know, there's a lot to be optimistic about. There's a lot to kind of be surprised about right now. But we're still below, at least according to the June numbers, we're still below the 10-year sales average. And prices have remained basically – well, in certain markets, they've went up considerably. Most, I would say, are basically static over the last couple months. But it's, of course, worth noting that – real estate pricing is not like the stock market. It doesn't it's not liquid like that. It doesn't drop and go up and drop and go up day over day. There is a lag. So if we're going to see any sort of price declines, you know, it's going to take more than a month or two for that to play out. But I can tell you, with the sales volume going the way it is right now, you know, we're going to have to see something change for pricing to start going down. And it takes months for that to occur.
So, Matt, what are we watching for then?
What are we watching for in terms of getting a sense of market direction?
Yeah.
There's three things we're watching. One, inventory levels. Okay. Obviously, we're expecting inventory to kind of pop once everybody got back outside and kind of felt safe. Inventory levels are rising. There's no doubt about it. But we still, it's worth noting, have 23.7% fewer listings today than we did a year ago at this time.
Sure.
So there's less inventory today than a year ago. That's one thing. So watch that inventory. If inventory starts growing over the coming months and it's not being absorbed, of course, that's when you see prices decline. We're not there yet. Unemployment. What happens, especially in relation to COVID benefits running out, when CERB runs out, when potential deferrals run out? It's going to be an interesting fall. And this makes me think of the Moody Analytics episode we had not long ago, where he literally tracks unemployment levels.
Brendan Lacerda. Yeah.
Tracks unemployment levels in BC to Vancouver housing prices. So if you didn't hear that one, go back. But we're
super
watching unemployment.
Super interesting calculation he uses. That's a great episode. Definitely go back.
That is a great episode for sure. And last but not least, migration levels. Are we going to get back to levels pre-COVID, and how long is that going to take, and what does that look like? Vancouver's a market that's buoyed by international migration, of course, and international students and the like. And what does that look like in the coming months? Those are the three kind of metrics we're watching for sure. Now, Adam, I just want to say, in regards to the other point that I made, so what you're hearing, right? You're hearing market collapse. Now, we just covered that. Here's what you hear. Here's what we know as of right now without any sort of predictions. Now, the other thing you hear is Vancouver has the most indebted population in the country.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that you hear is Vancouver's the most indebted city in the country, right?
Right.
The people walking around Vancouver with Gucci bags
Yaletown has the highest credit card declines in all of the country.
Maybe all of North America. That's probably true.
That was an old Mike Hofer story. Is that actually? Don't take that one to the bank yet. But that was the story.
Mike take Hofer your credit card to the bank and give it back to them.
Past guest, fan favorite. But okay, Vancouver has a very high indebted population. Here's what we know about deferrals. Quebec is deferring mortgages right now close to 30%.
Right.
Ontario's deferring mortgages over 20%. Alberta's deferring mortgages 27%, I think. BC is
These are high numbers.
It's
like one-third of the population.
Literally, almost one-third of the population is saying, I am not paying my mortgage right now, or I cannot pay my mortgage right now.
Exactly.
BC, 7%.
See, and that's the difference. I feel like BC, the amount of money,
the level of and wealth.
There's a lot of wealth in this province for sure. And I think that is a staggering statistic when you compare it to other regions in Canada.
So it is an interesting thing to note that you're hearing things like, hey, you know, we're teetering, and then you look at deferrals and it's like, well, hey, we're more in line with the Saskatchewans and Manitobas of the world than we are with the Alberta, Ontario, and Quebecs of the world. So that's what you hear and what you know. But there's also other things you hear.
Yeah, Matt, one thing that we're definitely hearing and what everyone will be hearing is that no one wants to live in cities anymore. They're petri dishes for disease, and that bedroom communities and resort towns are going to boom. And we've talked about this on the podcast a lot lately, and there's truth to that, right? I mean, you hear anecdotally that people are moving to Squamish or moving to Victoria or moving to Nanaimo, all over, right? Anecdotally, clients of ours are actually
I feel like it's like stats or no stats. I'm talking to a lot of people about communities that I didn't talk to people about very much before.
Exactly.
Nanaimo is one of them. That to me seems to come up almost daily right now.
For sure. And here's what this is based on. It's based on, one, this notion that vertical living is now too dangerous, right? Nobody wants to ride an elevator, push buttons. There's buildings that have had outbreaks. It's scary, right? And you also don't want to be stuck in your condo or feel stuck in your condo. Two is that people can now work from home and they no longer need to commute.
Like 1 or 2 days a week.
Exactly. So now if you can, you know, get more space, get some land, go and mountain bike all day in Squamish or do whatever you want, and all you have to do is drive into the city once or twice a week, that's manageable.
Yeah, it sounds all right.
Yeah, it does sound all right. I know. Actually, I'm convincing selling myself. And three is that couples need more space to properly hide from each other. And this one's, you know, we're being facetious in some cases, not in yours. But I think that one thing is for sure is that people have realized they've really gotten to know their space, right? And they're finding that they need more of it. So that's what this idea is based on. And there's definitely some truth to this in addition to our anecdotal
comments. This reminds me of the anti-Dustin Woodhouse line from 3 or 4 years ago that the most expensive square footage is outside of your home.
That was my quote from a conversation I had with Dustin
Woodhouse. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Not Dustin Woodhouse. That was your brilliant line.
Yeah, brilliant line. That was my brilliant line. The most expensive square footage is outside your home.
Yes.
Which is true.
Yeah.
That's why the city's broke. okay, so number one, why are we seeing some truth to this? Well, one, sales activity in the Fraser Valley is up 113% since last month.
Yeah, it's incredible.
32% from June of 2019. Squamish is on a run right now.
And just to make a note here, Fraser Valley is
outperforming Vancouver.
Yeah, outperforming Vancouver. Yeah.
And Squamish right now, we've been bullish on Squamish for a long time. We talk about Squamish on this podcast ad nauseum.
I feel like, if there's
you're
any
convincing
if,
yourself.
If there's any boosters out there for Squamish, we should be getting like paid.
You bought a mountain bike. You've got RockShox. I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. RockShox.
Yeah, RockShox.
But here's the thing. You're potentially going to Squamish. I love Squamish. It's up. Condos 4.7% last month. Detached up 2.5%. It's on a run.
It's on a run. Think about 4.7% in condos. Like, think back to 2017 where the market was just every month over month over month, the prices were just totally different every month because they were rising so quickly.
Right.
Like 4.7% is 2017 numbers in Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly. And so you got to kind of pause and ask yourself, well, you know, will Langley be the next Yale town?
That is – I feel like that's – we're
the burning question that everybody –
question that we're all thinking about.
That person on the treadmill. Well, wait. Will Langley be the next Yale town? Well, what we know is no.
Yeah.
For sure.
Maybe Fort Langley.
Yeah. Exactly.
But actually, I think that's a Kerrisdale.
Is it? So to recap, Matt, what you're going to hear is that bedroom communities and resort towns are going to boom, and that what you'll hear is that the city might suffer. Vertical living might suffer a bit. And what – we actually know is that for the short term, there seems to be some truth to that. But what do we like?
Well, we like are cities. And we specifically like global cities. And we like cities like Vancouver. And there's no bias in this room.
Yeah.
Think all you have to do is look to history. And it's funny, when we did the Zoom call, right? This was the one where we got a little bit of pushback.
Yeah, I've got an answer for that guy who went by his initials and not his full name.
Coward.
You know, if you're gonna chirp, put your full name down.
So yeah, I'd never done a Zoom presentation where actually the room can make comments. So yeah. As you're talking, somebody's disagreeing with you.
They're just body shaming you
in real time.
Yeah, they're the only, and you can't see anyone. Although we could see everyone in this presentation. So if you're there,
yeah.
Nice bathrobe.
Yeah. Okay, but all you got to do again is look to history. Now, it feels like this global pandemic is brand new and it's never happened before. But let's look to history. 14th century bubonic plague hits Italy.
Okay,
Florence decimated. 50%. Of the population is wiped out. People were saying at the time, the city's dead, move to the countryside. It's a death wish. You know, it's like back in the 14th century when you went to a hospital, it was like a death wish. You never wanted to go.
It's like that Charles Bronson movie.
Death wish, yeah. What happens almost immediately after? Well, Florence is the epicenter of the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't have to tell you more about the Renaissance.
No big whoop, said the Italians.
Yeah. Let's move on to Philadelphia, 1793, hit by yellow fever. 10%. Now, this 10% of the city died, which in comparison is not all that much, but that's a lot of people. Now, Thomas Jefferson himself, Adam, said – and this Philadelphia at this time was the largest city,
sure.
Right? This was the
epicenter.
This was another epicenter. Philadelphia – was the largest city. Thomas Jefferson said, the one silver lining of 10% of the population dying is people won't want to be in cities. Cities are never going to grow in the United States like they had in Europe. And he saw that as a positive. What emerged shortly thereafter? Rockies 1-5.
Yeah. And a great movie called Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Matt, you've got one more historical example.
Now, I can't remember what the critique was. I think it was that the internet wasn't.
No. We'll get to that. We'll get to that critique. But you got one more.
I got one more. 1918 flu pandemic. Now, John Barry was on the show.
Best-selling New York Times best-selling author.
That's right. John Barry literally wrote the book on the 1918 flu pandemic. He, 3-4 days ago, just came out with an opinion piece in the New York Times talking about how much worse this can get. John Barry's everywhere right now. I think you heard
him. Also on our show.
You heard him first on the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. Lives in Louisiana. We asked John, what do you think comes out of this based on what occurred after the flu pandemic in 100 years ago, basically? And what did John say? The Roaring Twenties.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that movie? The Great Gatsby. I think it was based on a book. I have no idea.
Never heard of it.
and the critique, Matt, was that this was the critique at the talk. And we didn't notice it until someone brought it up afterwards.
Yeah.
But the critique was basically they didn't have technology at those time in that time. You idiots, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I don't think he
said you idiots.
No,
I think he said LOL. One of those like passive aggressive LOLs.
Yeah,
like
and
I said,
you know,
something.
I feel like
now I'm LOLing.
We might be demonstrating that we have very thin skin. More so than anything else here?
We actually didn't care. But the only thing is, it was just funny because the point is not that they didn't have technology. And we have technology now. Sure, you can have a Zoom meeting. The point is that people like to mingle. People want to be out. I don't think Zoom is replacing human interaction.
No. You have to socialize, right? I feel like that's part of human nature is to socialize. That would be our one comment on that.
Sure.
And the second one is, and Adam, we have a quote here from Gil Kelly, Vancouver's chief planner, past guest, one of my favorite episodes of all time. But what he highlights is that cities now, especially because of technology, are actually more important than they've ever been.
Yeah. And I'm going to recite that quote because it's cities and metropolitan areas are the primary unit of change around the globe. It's no longer nations, provinces, states. The real power to innovate and where most wealth is generated is at the city and metropolitan level. Increasingly, and this is the best part, increasingly, we are a global structure made up of cities. How true is that?
That's such a great quote, and I think that speaks to kind of the interconnectedness of our world in a way that this pandemic, as damaging and as dangerous and as life-altering as it is not going to change.
Well, this is it. And I mean, you can still talk about it being regional, but I mean, even in terms of Vancouver, in terms of its industries, in terms of how it kind of communicates with talent, we're more like Seattle or San Francisco than we are like Edmonton.
Yeah.
I would say.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Cascadia,
sure.
Think Cascadia.
But groups of cities that share certain qualities will be what happens moving forward, right? I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and I think that was Gil Kelly's idea as well. So, Adam, we like cities, okay? Now let's think about the city of Vancouver. What do we like specifically right now?
So, Matt, we like, first of all, detached. And detached in the city of Vancouver right now is really, really heating up. It's going on a run. It's on a run. And I think here's a couple reasons why. First of all, it's the perfect middle ground for people that need more space, that want a yard now, but they still want to be close to the infrastructure that the city offers, right?
Threads that needle.
It does thread that needle, for sure. Two, the second reason why we like detached is that it's a diminishing supply. Say there's around 40,000 detached houses in the city of Vancouver. That supply amount is decreasing year over year.
And like just to give a sense, like my neighborhood, okay? So I live in Grandview.
Yes.
A block from my house on Venables, I've watched four duplexes be built on that block over the past year.
Right.
So that means four single-family homes have disappeared and four duplexes have been built. A couple blocks over near Lord Nelson School, there's been a land assembly and there's going to be purpose-built rental built there. Mm-hmm. Those houses are gone. Across the street from there, Ella. That was a great project.
Yep.
Pre-sold, sold out. On the other side of Nanaimo, that's single-family homes disappearing. So if you want some examples of just how quickly that supply is diminishing, there's some.
Yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, just drive around Vancouver as a whole and you'll see projects going on.
Or within a block of my house.
Yeah, specifically your house. You know, Matt, it's hard to imagine that the half duplex is not going to become the new single family home in the city limits of Vancouver, right? Or the townhouse complex.
Right.
Because really, the reality is that we are, like, homes are getting demolished and redeveloped at a very quick pace.
Yeah.
And there's not a huge supply to go through. Like, that's what people, like, it's a diminishing supply.
Yeah.
Like, that's the key here, right? Is there is already almost no inventory in the single family market right now, and we're losing that inventory as we speak.
That's it. I mean, it doesn't take rocket scientists to say you can't build more of this.
Well, yeah, but we had a rocket scientist just say it now, myself. Okay. The third point, Matt, is that latent value and best use is increasing dramatically right now. The city of Vancouver has already indicated that density is a key proponent here for their overall mandate of affordability. So we're actually seeing latent value increase. You can do more with single family lots. You can do more with heritage homes. You can do more with a lot. You can do more with RS1. You can build duplexes. So there's a lot of things going on right now. The value of the land and the best use is increasing. So that's a huge, huge factor. Yeah,
latent value.
Four is CMHC agrees.
This was an interesting thing that came out of our talk with Eric Bond. The line, and I don't know if he came up with it on the spot, but it seems like a great line and maybe one that presumably they're talking about a lot at CMHC, that the single family market in Vancouver or the detached market is detached from market conditions.
That was profound.
It was. I like that.
I did. I like that as well. He's a bright guy.
Yeah.
There's no question. But it is. It feels detached in a lot of ways. He was saying the price points are detached from all of the metrics that they typically look at, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he was saying the price points are detached, but he also – my understanding of it was that it's also detached from larger analysis. Economic conditions,
yeah.
Right? That the people that are buying detached, it's not a local person that's buying it based on what their annual income is. It's somebody who's either made a lot of money somewhere else or made a lot of money in past real estate in Vancouver.
Sure.
But it trades
among wealthy people.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And last but not least, Matt, this one is what you're hearing as well out there. It's that like the no strata thing. Here's a couple. Strata has been in a lot of ways. I mean, stratas are still selling and we'll get to that. But in a lot of ways right now, it's become riskier to own a strata, right? You've got.
I feel like there hasn't been a lot of good news for stratas lately.
No, exactly. Like the insurance thing that we've covered extensively on this program, the rising insurance premiums. Premiums went up between 50 and 300% for stratas, which means your maintenance fee has probably gone up or it's probably going up when you renegotiate your insurance premium. It seems to be so kind of haphazard in terms of the buildings that are targeted for huge deductibles.
You could have a building
that's 5 years old and it can have a $250,000 water deductible.
Well, there's a building downtown that is 2017.
Yeah.
And it just went from like 25 grand to 250 grand.
And as we heard
How many claims would they have made by now? I can't imagine they've made that many water claims in that building.
Yeah, and in the last – the last time we talked to one of our insurance brokers, he mentioned that a building had hit a $1 million water deductible in Greater Vancouver. I'm guessing it's outside of the city of Vancouver. I don't actually know which building it is. He was pretty tight-lipped about it. But anyways, apparently a building has a water deductible of $1 million.
That's incredible. I feel like also just with other things like – tightening up on Airbnb, all sorts of bylaw changes. People that are not keen on following rules,
right?
You know,
they're sick of it.
Yeah, I feel like there's kind of a sentiment out there right now.
Yeah, and last but not least, of course, depreciation reports have been in place long enough now that I think it's strange, but we're finally accepting that buildings, especially older buildings in BC, are severely underfunded in a lot of cases.
Well, one thing that you hear all the time from people from Ontario is they come to Vancouver and go, whoa.
What are you guys doing?
First of all, yeah. What do they call HOA fees? HOA. But second of all, they go, why are your maintenance fees like a third of what our
– And why do you have no money in the bank?
Yeah.
And also – and why – and they've had reserve fund studies, our depreciation report, for years, right?
Yeah, for longer than us.
And they do a lot of stuff. Like they'll actually – like levies are almost – it's not the primary option, right? They would put it in the operating budget or they would have – money in the bank for it typically.
Right. Kind of a different culture around
– We kind of blew it with stratas in a lot of ways and then we got hammered with the leaky condo thing. So a lot of stratas have just been beat up over time. But it's not uncommon to go into an older building that's going to need a lot of work and see $50,000 in the bank.
Yeah.
That's not uncommon.
And strata fees at maybe like 43 cents a square
39
foot.
Cents yeah. a foot, which like, is huh. – and that operating budget's tighter than Secret skinny jeans.
But let's keep on this thing. We're getting
it's cool that you wear those jeans.
Yeah.
For sure. It's pretty cool.
But okay, so we're talking detached. So stratas are also some people it seems like there's a general sense that if you can avoid it, it's a good thing to do. Let's talk about what's going on in the market right now with detached.
Yeah.
Like you've said it's busy, but how busy is it?
So here's the thing. East Vancouver detached outperformed the entire market for detached in the past year. It's up almost 8%, 7.9% in 1 year. We've in the last 6 months, it's up 4%. And it's still, I mean, multiples on almost everything. And I'm writing on a lot of detached houses these days. And it's multiples. I got one coming to market. I'm excited for it. Yeah. It's a great market for sellers. It's a not so great market for buyers. In fact, it is a horrible market for buyers. It's not
uncommon.
It's always
been a challenging market. Buying a single family home is never an easy process in Vancouver, but it's particularly challenging right now.
It is. And I'm talking to a lot of agents. I mean,
what about the West Side? Tell us about the West Side.
The West Side actually is under $4 million. It's a seller's market and a fairly aggressive seller's market.
Yeah.
Up to $4 million bucks. And look at what the West Side is actually doing right now too. And of course, the version of this document I have, it's like basically covered.
I think it's up 4% in the last 3 months, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up 4% in the last 6 months, Matt. Which is kind of crazy when you think about, like, we're in a global pandemic, and in the last 6 months, we've seen that market go up 4%.
The West Side is so dramatically different than it was a year ago. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. So to recap, Matt, it feels like detached is going on another run. It feels like inventory is going to remain low in that market, and it definitely is increasing in terms of capital gain at a quick pace. But it's not a fun market to shop in. Just a warning.
But we still like it.
Yeah,
we like it. Single family detached in Vancouver a lot.
What do we also like though?
So here's another market that we like, and this it's worth noting, and we were talking about this before we went on. We're going to release this probably a couple days from now, and this might be totally different from what I'm saying
like
right
the
now.
Market's changing.
It's changing
quick. And we
so
wrote this
fast.
2 weeks ago.
In normal Vancouver real estate style, if it's more than a week old, it's totally out of date. But here's another thing we like. Studios and one beds. So we talk about studios and one beds all the time as an investment vehicle of choice if you're looking to invest in Vancouver real estate. Why? Generally, they're very easy to rent.
Yes.
I would say the easiest type of property to rent.
Couples can rent them. Singles can rent them. Downsizers can rent them. There's a lot of people that can rent them.
Right. The highest rent per square foot.
Yeah,
exactly. Fewer operating headaches. Now, this will go exactly against what we were just talking about with Stratus. But single family homes have
they're
a lot
easy though for someone to rent. Like, I mean, it's a lot harder to rent multiple suites in a house, right?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, right?
Sure.
Yeah, I feel like you buy a one bedroom condo in a concrete building downtown. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally
set it and forget it.
You literally now. Depending on what type of person you are, you might want to go to the AGM, but you can literally not even pay attention at all. And those large complexes are run pretty well, pretty professionally. So fewer operating headaches and less capital invested. We, of course, realize not everybody listening, you know, everybody might think, well, single families, that does sound great. But the buy-in is basically 1.5, maybe 1.3.
Depends where you're shopping, but yeah, you got to have fairly deep pockets to play in that market.
Fairly, it's largely detached from the market.
So if you are looking for an investment property that's fairly turnkey, something like a one bedroom makes a lot of sense.
Right. So let's talk about this market, because this is a market where in the downturn of 2018 and early 2019, this market actually performed, I would say, the best, arguably the best out of any submarket. I feel like prices basically remained stable in this kind of $500,000-$600,000 entry point. And we actually had a busy June, right?
Mm-hmm.
Downtown, we saw sellers markets basically from 400 to 800K. It was busy. West Side, 400 to 600K with 60% sales ratios. Like, that's an aggressive seller's market. The East Side wasn't quite as busy as the West Side, but it was still definitely in seller's market territory, like 30% in terms of sales ratio. So this market right now is busy.
And it's busy, like, just speaking from someone who's got a few buyers right now looking for a one bed, it's a challenging market. A lot of stuff is sold. A lot of stuff is going in multiple offers. And this is a market where we were seeing a ton of pent-up demand between January, well, early in the year and late last year. But one beds were going crazy, right? Multiple offers on almost everything. Now it's kind of shifted. It's still very busy, but like the tier one stuff is really, really moving.
Yeah, I feel like it's, to use a scientific phrase, it's a little bit more touch and go right now.
Yes.
It's like what, but it's a little bit puzzling. There's no rhyme or reason in certain cases.
Great one beds, you know, with parking, higher floor, good floor plan. Like they're selling, right?
Yeah,
if they're priced well,
largely tier one, tier two. That analysis I think would hold.
Sure.
So we've always liked studios and one beds. In the city of Vancouver, that's for sure. But we like them right now, or potentially right now, for a different reason than the detached market. And what I would say is that this seems to be, unlike the last downturn, a submarket that is potentially vulnerable in the coming months, right?
Yeah.
And again, it's worth noting, it's busy right now. What we know is it's busy right now. There's no way at those... with the activity that's going on right now, that prices are declining in this market. But here's looking forward. Here's what we're thinking.
Why is it potentially vulnerable?
So here's what I'm thinking in the next 6 to 12 months, and we've talked about a lot. One is COVID, unfortunately, has hit younger people harder, and it's hit people with less job security harder,
right.
And it's hit people that make less money harder. Like that's just
less established in their career.
Right.
Perhaps.
Right. That's just a fact, right? I think that's a well-documented fact right now. So this entry-level price point, thinking about job uncertainty, there could be people that were hoping to get into this market that are going to hit pause. There are people that are in this market that are maybe feeling the brunt of a changing employment terrain.
Exactly.
And needing to sell. Now, of course, so basically we're talking over-leveraged end users or homeowners or over-leveraged investors, because there's a lot of investors in this market, people with one or two doors.
Yep.
This is, of course, potentially exacerbated by the end of mortgage deferrals and CERB, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I think a lot of people are doing okay because T.O. Justin has stepped up.
T.O.
Uncle Justin. That's Spanish for uncle, yeah.
Yeah. Is that a thing that other people say?
No, I think I just made that up.
T.O. Justin. That might be a sticker. Just Uncle T.O.?
Can you say Uncle T.O. because that's redundant? Just Uncle. T.O. Justin has stepped up. We got the CERB coming right now. We have the ability to defer mortgages. What happens when this runs out, which inevitably at some point it runs out, right?
Yes.
And what does unemployment look like at that point? I think this is made even more difficult potentially for people that own one beds or studios as investment properties because rent deferral,
right?
I believe right now if you're having trouble collecting rent, say on one bedroom that rents at $2,000, the government's stepping up and giving you $500. Well, that's not gonna cover.
If you're a mom and pop investor and you have like one or two doors and you've actually had issues with collecting rent right now, and maybe now you're covering someone's rent or you're trying to get rid of your tenant and you can't, or you're having complications around that, you gotta be starting to go, the hell with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's a certain type of investor out there who...
A novice.
Is it novice or novice?
Oh, sorry. Novice is the internet company.
A novice. A novice, but also somebody I think that just doesn't handle...
A TELUS.
doesn't handle stress particularly well.
Sure.
They might be thinking mutual funds look better at this moment, right? So the uncertain rental conditions for sure. And last but not least, and we've talked about this already, but potential rising maintenance costs, potential rising insurance costs. There's a lot of things that make this submarket potentially vulnerable over the next couple months. And the only thing I'd note before we move on is that in June it was busy. I think the July numbers are going to be...
I think they're going to be busier.
They're going to be even busier.
Yeah, a lot of stuff is selling. But to recap your points, you're saying kind of job uncertainty, over-leveraged end users and investors potentially, the end of mortgage deferrals and CERB, maintenance and insurance costs increasing, and rental condition or uncertainty for landlords, I guess.
That's right. So what does this actually look like? This potentially looks like over the next 6 to 12 months, a lot of people trying to sell.
Yeah.
And it potentially looks like a lot fewer buyers, right? That's kind of, in terms of prices declining, that is a potential situation here, okay?
Sure.
But again, the market is not saying, suggesting
that right
now.
We're not seeing that right now.
This is a purely speculative exercise.
Sure.
So one area that I think is actually kind of at that level right now, last time I checked, this was a week or two ago, is an area that we've talked about on this show quite a bit before. And we should just talk about it quickly because the sales ratios overall are definitely seller's market territory. But in Northeast False Creek now, and when I say Northeast False Creek, I mean I literally drew a map around Crosstown and Chinatown. Okay.
Yes.
So Crosstown and Chinatown sales for studios and one bedrooms as of a week ago, from June 1st to a week ago, and which would be what, June or July 9th or 10th, there was four sales of 37 listings. That's an 11% sales ratio. That's a buyer's market right now in the last month. It's not performing as well as the market overall. And this is a area of the city that we've talked about liking before and we still very much like.
Well, this is it. And it blows my mind that you can have something so close to the hot areas, like to the areas that are exploding, right? I mean, it blows my mind that Crosstown, right by Chinatown SkyTrain station, still great buildings in that pocket.
Super close to Costco.
Super close to close to a lot of great restaurants, close to Yale Town, close to everywhere, is so soft when the rest of one bedrooms downtown kind of just a little bit further west, but blocks west, right?
Right.
So busy.
This is walk. We're talking like...
Yeah, we're talking a
walking,
hop, skip, and a jump.
Right.
So this is surprising. And maybe that creates an opportunity because, like, we've talked about it extensively on this program, but there's a bright future for Northeast False Creek. One is the Northeast False Creek plan. And this is everyone, you know, a lot of people out there are going to go, well, wait a second. The city that's the biggest infrastructure project that the city's ever announced, and they're going broke. Okay, well, they're partnered with development community. Those viaducts have to come down. They're not structurally sound.
My understanding of that is, yeah, if the one hospital downtown is moving outside of downtown, those viaducts are not the vehicle to get people to the hospital.
But they're also,
especially with an earthquake.
I think that that's the seismic thing, right? So they have to come down. And what I'm thinking, and they've already started working on things. Like, you'll notice that Pryor just got calmed.
I'm not sure if you've noticed that.
Yeah.
30 kilometers on Pryor when you're trying to get home at 6.
Yeah, maybe you've noticed it. And the fake cars parked along the side of the street. Yeah. Did you notice
that? I'm actually literally starting to think about taking a bike, though, which is exactly what the city wants me to
exactly,
do.
Exactly, exactly. Northeast False Creek, we've talked about it before, but Amazon, 7,000 new employees coming to the area. These are highly educated, walk-to-work type people. Young, urban, gainfully employed, and fantastic tenants, right? Because they work all the time.
And fantastic purchasers of homes.
Anyone out there that works for Amazon knows that you get no time off. No offense, Amazon.
Yeah.
St. Paul's Hospital. We're talking about now the southeast point of Northeast False Creek. We are going to see anchored by a huge state-of-the-art hospital facility. Everyone knows where it is. It's right by the train station.
2026, I think.
This is going to take the area from 8,000 jobs to 30,000 jobs over the next 30 years. It's going to create a hospital ecosystem. Look at like VGH in Fairview, for example. Look at how many cafes, restaurants, exciting things over there that support a labor force of healthcare workers. And guess what? Those healthcare workers, they make great incomes. They're fantastic tenants. They work a lot. And they want to work,
and
they want to be close to home.
And they're heroes.
But here's exactly. They're heroes, but they also want to be very close to work because a lot of them are on call. Like, let's be honest. Like, they have to get to work in a short period of time. We've helped a ton of doctors, and doctors, especially ER doctors, you know, they need to be close to work, and they can't have a huge commute time because sometimes they just have to get there.
Yeah, because they're there. Yeah.
Yeah.
They work a lot.
Yeah, wearing their scrubs. And last but not least, Matt, this one's like a little bit of a throwaway, but I'm just going to highlight it anyways. Broadway subway line, specifically the Great Northern Way track, is going to anchor this community as well. Make it super walkable to get kind of to the east-west corridor of the new Broadway subway line.
Right.
And this is exciting because now, you know, somebody living in, say, Chinatown can walk a few blocks, hop on a SkyTrain, head to Commercial Drive in like no time, or eventually, well, currently, head to Arbutus once it's built, and eventually probably head out to UBC. So that is another reason. Like, we always highlight transportation. This is also bringing a ton of jobs to Vancouver as well. It's unbelievable how extensive these projects are and how it can basically be an infrastructure project that you think a hospital can create jobs. Anyways, it's going to be a huge, huge opportunity for people that own in this area as well. And we've highlighted on previous episodes, you know, what it means for areas like Grandview Woodlands being close to the terminus, and also for Fairview Slopes, like the actual true connector line at Cambie and Broadway, right? Close to City Hall. So to recap what we've kind of highlighted here, one is to bet on cities. Two is detached is blue chip real estate, really. And three, that there still are opportunities in studios and one beds, specifically in Northeast Falls Creek.
Right. That is the, if somebody was to ask me where the opportunities potentially lie, that is exactly where. And that's a submarket to watch over the next 6 to 12 months, I would say, more so than anything else.
It will be interesting for sure.
So maybe, Adam, as a final note, we should timestamp this.
Yeah, we will.
So we don't look silly in 3 days.
Yeah,
this is we're mid July. Yeah, we're mid July 2020.
9:22 a.m.
Things are changing, especially this year. Every 24 hours, it feels like we're something's entirely different. So all the caveats aside, hopefully everyone enjoyed that, and we'll catch you on the outro.
Yeah, and if anyone really, I mean, the thing is that we're updating this show on a weekly basis. So if there's anything that changes, you're going to hear it here first anyways.
Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
Yeah. See you on the outro.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you want to get in touch, head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We've got fantastic resources like private client services, because if you're not using PCS to search for real estate in Vancouver, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's available at our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We also have some of the best resources over there, including the Sellers Club, where you get the best selling resources for the market. And it's continuous. It's the best list out there. Sign up for the Sellers Club. And last but not least, the Livewire, where we're sending out stats and information about the market all the time, including episode updates. So thanks a lot for listening. And if you want to get in touch, it's 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Have a great week, everyone.
2,000 Faces for Radio.
Subscribe today.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com
or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.